like four or five versions of the same song. That's not something that's ever affected you when you were writing, has it, and recording?
Yeah, it depends. There's definitely not a lot, but there's definitely been situations where, like, even with some of these songs on this particular record, where I'll build it up into this like orchestral of instruments. You know, I'll turn it into like it'll start off with just a guitar and a voice, and then I'll put out all these things and take it to a place that it was never meant to be, and then I'll strip it all back down again, and then I'll find a happy medium somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, okay, I don't need all the orchestrated crap on it. It just needs to, you need to hear the singing. The important parts are these. And if you do too much, it totally takes away from it. And I have completely redone songs before, because sometimes if I'm really excited about an idea, I'll be so afraid of losing it that I'll record it really fast just so I have it documented.
Sure.
Almost like demoing, I guess. I mean, I don't really like that term. You know, Dan Aiken is the one that turned me off of the term demoing. It's like, are you recording a song or are you not? But this is sort of like me demoing really quickly so that, you know, in between my kids needing me and, you know, needing to be available to do all the other things in this house, I can quickly first spend a half an hour or an hour recording something, just getting it documented. And then I'll either, if it's good enough, it would, you know, which is a matter of opinion, you know, is anything good enough, is, you know, everybody
right.
Would have a different opinion on that, is then I'll start building from that demo, or I'll just start completely from scratch again and you know, try to make it a little bit, give it a better base, as opposed to just being building a song out of a demo.
When you said like documenting something, or when you get hit with an idea, like right off the top of my head, I did an interview a while back with the Dunlop brothers, and they're obsessive about the idea has to be recorded. So they're like, sometimes they're whispering into their phone, voice memo on their phone, like a song lyric or, you know, a couple lines from something. Is that something that you do, or is it, are you?
I have done that. I have done that actually. I don't know, the Customaries record, there was a lot of that, because I spent a lot of time writing the vocals and the singing for that record, driving back and forth to a job. So I would listen to it, you know, in the car, and I'd be kind of trying to write singing as I'm driving, trying to kill the commute. And then, you know, if I came up with something I really liked in the morning, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to forget that by the end of the day. So I would pick up my phone and I would like blast the song in the car and make a, you know, make a recording on my phone of me singing along the sort of melody with whatever part, just so that I wouldn't forget it. Yeah. I mean, for me, that's the hardest part, is like the singing melodies. You know, it's like it's always been the thing for me that I've always been the most self-conscious about and not always satisfied with. So if I come up with something I actually like, then I really am kind of obsessive about getting it documented so I don't forget it.
Yeah. Has there been anything that you forgot that you swore was the greatest thing you've ever said?
No, and it's never to do with quality of lyrics. It's always, to me, it's always quality of melody.
Right.
Like, yeah, lyrics to me are, you know, they're important, but they're also always interpreted in a way that by everybody that listens to it differently than what they are. So like you could almost, as long as something is, if it's personal to you, but it can also be relative to anybody in any different way. I mean, that's sort of the sign of a good lyric to me, because you want people to, you don't want people to have your personal experience. You want people to have their own.
Feeding
so
off,
open-ended.
Yeah. Feeding, so they can feed off of what their own interpretation of what you did, and they get inspired by it, or
Well, to me, that's just how I listen to lyrics. When I listen to lyrics, I like to relate to them in my own personal way, not in, oh, I wonder what he was thinking about when he wrote this. You know, like, I don't care what the right person that wrote the song really wrote it about necessarily. I care more about how I, when I listen to it, what I think it relates to. You know, I think, and there's a lot of songs where you can't even do that because it's so obviously about something specific.
Right.
You know, and then I'll find myself not really liking those types of songs. You know?
To run, you haven't waking up in room.
Well, you put 10 tracks up on, and you released it on Bandcamp. You have 10 tracks up there, and you titled it Division Street. How did you come up with this title, Division Street? Why that?
I came up with that title through traveling down, you know, it's going to sound such a cliche, cheesy answer, but
please go
traveling
ahead.
Up and down the 401 between Toronto and Montreal. The halfway point is Division Street in Kingston.
Oh, really?
Kind of, sort of the halfway point. It's like a lot of people would consider, if you do that drive a lot, would consider Kingston sort of your halfway point.
Right.
Where you might stop and get food or stop for a rest or whatever. And I would drive by there, and I always thought Division Street, you know, I always thought that's such a cool... And then I noticed every time I would go to a town, we'd be driving around with, well, whether I'm with Wintersleep or whoever I'm with, and I've always... Now I'm starting to notice that most towns in, at least Canada anyway, have a division street in them. Right. And it kind of represents, you know, and if you really, for me anyway, and this is me interpreting it in my own way, not actually looking up the history of it. It always represents something. There's one side of Division Street is always different than the other side. There's always, it always seems like the reason it's called Division Street is because this side of the street, when this town was developed, was one thing, and the other side was obviously another. And it may not be that obvious now with things being built and how things are modernized or whatever, but, and I always thought, you know, that's just a really cool, and I couldn't believe that it wasn't already taken as an album title.
Really?
You know, and I thought, like, this is an album title. It seems like such a great title, and it amazes, like, there's no way that's available, you know? And so I went online, I started looking around, and I was like, I'm not finding anybody that's, you know.
It's like, all right, yeah.
And then I started thinking, oh, maybe it's not a very good title.
It's that self-doubt thing.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, yeah, basically I just, you know, I kind of came up with it because while I was writing these songs and working on this record, I was driving back and forth between Montreal and Toronto a lot. We recorded our record, actually, the Wintersleep's last record. We recorded a lot of it in Kingston at the bathhouse. So, you know, and rehearsing, you know, basically preparing to make that record and preparing to go on tours and stuff, driving back and forth to Montreal, rehearsing with Wintersleep. And so I was driving by that sign repeatedly.
Yeah, exposed to it, yeah.
Yeah, and then I would come home and I would work on, you know, and a lot of the songs... You know, I'd say probably 50%, I'd say half, are about that time of, in my life where I was, you know, I'm touring with those guys. It was kind of like a new experience. My life had taken a pretty big change going, joining Wintersleep. And now I'm traveling around Europe and Canada and the U.S. being a musician, you know, which was for a living, which was a new thing for me. Like, it's not that, but that experience is something that was, you know, new to me at the time, and so everything seemed a little bit surreal. Like, I was like, is this really happening?
Waiting in the guard for the thank you.
Isn't that kind of like the intent? Like I don't mean to speak for you, but when I often hear stories like this where it's just like, well, we were just putting our music out, and then all of a sudden I'm doing this and this. Well, what did you really want? Like as a kid, I'd be like, this is what I want to happen. I want to, like, I'm listening to this Destroyer album. I'm putting the makeup on. I want to be in Kiss.
This is my intent.
It's not to, like, you know, I'm going to go bust some empties in the bar, but I really like Kiss. Like, you know.
Yeah, no, I think every kid that, you know, gets good at music. I mean, for me, writing started right away. You know, as soon as I was able to play guitar, I wasn't trying to learn songs by my favorite bands. I was trying to write songs right away, you know. And so for me, it was always sort of I want to be a songwriter. I want to, you know, do that. I feel very, like, I love doing it. It's like, I genuinely get joy out of it. Which is, you know, when you're a teenager in a small town, there's not a lot of things you get genuine joy from. You know, you work at a pizza place and you go to high school with a whole bunch, like, you know, there's like four people there you can relate to out of 200, whatever, you know. Being a songwriter was something that I always got a lot of, I felt really good about. And so, yeah, there was always that sort of urgency to want to try and do that, especially with, you know, a chore. We toured, you know, we got signed to Sonic Onion, you know, did three records on Sonic Onion and, like, struggled. Like, you know, we did really well in Hamilton and we did really well in Halifax, you know, in certain small towns around here. But, like, it was like we would tour out west and, you know, we'd come home. Like, it would be fun. But the funnest parts were the parts in between the shows, you know, like the shows themselves were always just, you know, depressed. We were always in the worst part of town, places that had no business having shows, you know. And it was always just like this learning, this school of rock kind of, where it's like, this is what it's like. So, you know, and we toured Canada a whole bunch of times, but never, I always sort of had that feeling of like, I really know that I want to do this and I like doing it, even if this part of it sucks, you know.
Right.
Like, and so, you know, hence I made that first solo record and started doing shows on my own and tried to expand out, and yeah, and the sound thing happened, and then, you know, it's just such a weird road.
But with you, like back in the day, when you were when you finished up Chore, what surprised me the most was is that Chore had this, you know, it was a heavy band. You know, it wasn't a soft band, but there were certain elements of it on certain songs where they were a little bit lighter and melancholy, but it was like a heavy melancholy to listen to. But what freaked me out, I think, about that came in a Chore was, Dave did the David's Project, right? Which was just floored me that I'm like, wait a minute, Dave thinks like that? That's crazy. That's like, you know, which opened up my whole new respect for him. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And
he's a really, really good, like, unsung songwriter. He did a lot of stuff on those tour records that I don't think people realize.
But when you guys stopped playing, you broke up that sort of thing, I was always like, okay, well, there has to be more to this band than what I heard. And then when you came up, I remember you came up at the old radio station, you sat down, and you sang White and Cold.
Oh, yeah.
And I just my pants on the air when you did that.
All right, I'm in winter sleep territory then. That's awesome.
I can't believe you repeated that joke, but okay, that's fine.
We weren't recording it when we were talking about
that. And I said I wouldn't talk about that, but here we are talking about that. But no, but it was a whole new opening of learning about a band and the people in the band when I was seeing the different projects that each band member was doing, and then you came up and you did that song, and I remember saying to my buddy Matt Holmes at the time, I said, this guy has got this folk thing down, and he nailed it right there in that one performance, right?
I always had good luck in those Hamilton University College stations, like the CFMU and you guys. Like I always had a good, I don't know why, but I guess I just lack of nervousness. I don't know, but I always felt very comfortable performing in those places and would get these performances that even surprised myself. Like I don't have a high regard for my ability to perform by any means, you know? So I would always come out of those being like, yeah, that felt pretty good. Like usually when I walk off of a stage, I'm like, that was okay. You know, like you spend most of your time thinking about what you could have done better. But I mean, I remember that very well. And I remember that was a very exciting time for me too, because that was coming out of Chore and going into Alive and Living, kind of. So
it was the pre thing before Alive and Living, and then of course later on you hitched up with the other cats that were, you know, Jackson Hudecky was playing with you, and used to call him the Meatball Adam Constantini.
Yes, well, Jackson used to call him all kinds of things. Any nickname that Adam Constantini had was from Jackson.
The poor guy, but yeah, but so you've had this like this, I think, a re-education for Chris Bell from those earlier on things to being exposed to different bands and touring and that. So where does this leave you now that you've released this album? Is there another style of music that you're thinking about trying, or a full band thing? I know I'm asking a question that's being asked of you that's like, well, we're in the middle of a COVID pandemic, dummy, don't ask questions like that. But there has to be some sort of thought of like, well, what else can I do that's creative for Chris Bell?
Well, I mean, these songs I have played live. Like I can go up and with an acoustic guitar and do a good decent set of these songs that without all of the band background stuff. And I did some of that year or more ago now. I did a few shows in between Winter Sleep tour, and then Winter Sleep picks up and gets busy, and there's absolutely no time to commit to anything.
There's no room there.
And then it goes away, and so when I come home from a long tour or something, or a long come to an end of a long stint of Winter Sleep being busy, it's like, I just kind of want to, so you just want to chill. So it's like, It comes and goes in phases for me, and obviously right now I'm at home in my studio, I'm teaching my kids all morning their schoolwork or whatever,
and then
it's like, okay, I should probably be doing something creative here because I've got the time, and there's nothing else getting in the way, I'm just at home being dad, and so I might as well take this time to. And then I was like, I got this record. And, about a week ago, I started listening to it. I had a buddy here in Grimsby. He started asking me about stuff. And he's like, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And, he kind of he's very morally supportive. And I thought, you know what, I'll go back into my studio computer, I'll have a listen to this record that's just sitting there. And, you know, and having had so much time in between the last time I worked on it and this week, really, I listened to it in a different way than I had. The emotional attachment to it was very different. And so I was a little more like, you know what? Like I said earlier, I just like, let's, you know what? Like, this is done. Let's just call it done and put it on the internet and let people have it. And
you're done with it, yeah.
That'll be it. And meanwhile, at the same time, also working on songs still for, you know, me, Dave, and Mike have been jamming again a little bit and sort of writing and recording demos, you know, my favorite word.
The Dan Aiken thing's going to come up again.
Yeah, for that, you know. And so me, Dave, and Mike were, you know, just kind of nothing too serious, just working on songs before this whole thing hit. And then now we've come to a grinding halt or whatever, but trying to keep writing and keep working on, you know, heavy stuff again with those guys.
Sure.
As well. So, yeah, still writing. And I think you'll probably see some stuff come out of that. When this ends. And as far as this record goes, I'm going to, you know, put it up on all the internet stuff and, you know,
sure,
have it be available. And it's just sort of a time of my life, basically. It represents a time, and it's now available for people to listen to now that I'm over sort of like obsessing about it a little bit. It's just sort of done and there. And so I just thought, you know what, now's a good time because everybody's at home, people are looking for new music. And another thing too is the same guy in Grimsby here, John, who's kind of like my moral supporter,
right,
musically here, said, why don't you do like a, you know, why don't you do Instagram live, why don't you do like something live on the internet, like,
sure,
so many people are doing that now. And I was like, yeah. You know, like, I don't want to assume people give a crap about me doing that, so I'd almost rather just the record, you know, give people a record to listen to.
Well, yeah,
to
you can, you know. Yeah, yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. It's just like, it's like, here, I recorded this, it's, you know, I worked on it, enjoy it for what it is, and
yeah,
I'll maybe down the line you can do the Instagram live acoustic thing, but to me, it just sounds like here's something that you wrote, you did, as you said, and let's just leave it at that, and then,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then and if I do the live thing, I do it, but the two don't go together. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it could happen. You know, and putting a band together to record these songs or to, you know, perform these songs would be, you know, kind of a huge undertaking for me. So I like right now, I'm just happy that it's there,
yeah,
and there's no pressure. You know, it's just sort of, it's a thing that I did, and now it's there. Now I made it available at a time when people might be paying more attention. They're not distracted by, well, they're distracted by, you know,
sure,
the pandemic, but they're not distracted by their day-to-day life where their attention spans are, you know, very small, as we all have it with, you know, our jobs, our busy lives, and, you know, so much music available all the time, you know, like, so I thought, you know what, here you go, friends, have it.
Hey,
no,
this is Chris Bell. Check out my new album, Division Street, on the internet. You know, all the places you go to find music, it'll be there. Thank you.
You're listening to Steel City Music, your host Gunner, and that was a lot of fun talking to Chris Bell, man. Been like a little fanboy of his for years, and more than that, I mean, I've always liked the jokiness that we've had over the years. I don't know. I just think that all the stuff that this guy did has done in music has been really good and really solid. In that set of music, you heard Rust, E off G, Searching in the Dark, Whispering Town, Hands and Feet, Central Nervous System, Brightside Day, April, and A Plain Name. All of that is the Division Street album. And check it out on Bandcamp. Buy it. You can stream it and listen if you want, but go to Bandcamp and buy the bloody album. In that interview, I mentioned White and Cold, a live track that he did at the radio station. Some of my files are gone from the old days, but I did pull out White and Cold for you, the produced version. So we're going to close out this hour with White and Cold, Chris Bell, here on Steel City Music.
Hawk, 101.5 FM, online at 1015thehawk.ca.
All right, for this hour of music, we will take Toronto / Hamilton artist. Well, more Hamilton Dunville? Hamilton Dunville, Toronto. I know the members are all from this collective area, really. But mostly we just think they're from Hamilton anyway. So maybe just Hamilton artists is the way to start. Here on Steel City Music, we will spin some tunes from Don Vale. And we will take two albums. And you can find all of their music on Bandcamp. Go to Bandcamp, go buy the music. Go to Bandcamp and go buy their music. Just go do that. Go help bands out. All right. So I took some tracks from their album Fades from they released back in May of 2016, and their most recent stuff, Stand of Tide, May of 2019. All of this, of course, I'm talking about is Don Vale. Listen to Don Vale music. Go buy some Don Vale music.